Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. It is December 18. Of course, I am your host, Bryce Castillo.
As you have always been.
As always.
Yeah.
You can tell because...
Can I mention, this is just a... What a great intro. I mean, like, I don't know what it is, what's different than the normal intro, but, like, that was crisp.
I saw him have a smoothie beforehand. Yeah. I think it had some spirulina in it, and he's got a little more zest right now.
Yeah. The wheatgrass.
No, this is just... We're flying, man. Yeah. We're off to the races.
Of course, that's the voice of Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
And Justin Robert Young.
Oh, hi.
Hi. Gentlemen, today I received a dossier in my email of some very weird things happening.
Oh, well, I mean, we better investigate. That's our job, right?
Who sent it to you?
From someone, Andrew...
Concerned citizen.
Andrew Mail. Mr. Andrew Mail, I believe. we'll have to double-check that name.
Hey, but we always love listener mail. So whenever you get a chance to write in some listener, we love our listeners. They are great.
They're the heart and blood of
the Eating heart.
The heart and the blood. No, unfortunately, we should have capillaries now that I think about it. Heart and blood is not enough. You just make a mess that way, don't you?
All right. So, gentlemen, what do you know about volcanoes?
I know that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle once called them the zits of planet Earth.
Is that real?
Yeah, no, it's not.
Oh, I wouldn't believe
it. You know what? It might have been Sir Paul McCartney that called them the zits of planet Earth.
I really believe that one.
Noted volcanologist, Sir Paul McCartney.
So, like, what are some of the most notable volcanoes?
You think of... Certainly, when I was a kid watching 3-2-1 Contact, they showed a bunch of lava flows in Hawaii.
Oh, sure. They have a lot of active volcanoes all the time.
Right. And, in fact, Bonnie's lifetime goal is to poke lava with a stick. Oh. And the closest we've gotten so far is melting a big bunch of thermite to, you know, that's what, 4,000, 5,000 degrees, and it's just molten. It's only iron. But if you imagine that lava is only iron... Then I would assume the experience of poking that with a stick is pretty fairly similar. Analogous, not the same.
It gives a good, home version of our game.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
As far as lava goes.
Yeah, and I also know that Krakatoa exploded in the 1800s, mm-hmm. and the shockwave was felt around the world twice.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
and that they had colder winters for the following couple years
because of
debris. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Pompeii.
You know that one dude at Vesuvius got caught rolling the dice.
That's allegedly. Right.
Oh, wait, was that Pompeii or Vesuvius?
Oh, well, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's Pompeii. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I guess volcanoes, Mount St. Helens.
Mount St. Helens, sure.
I know. Oh, my God. There's some harrowing footage of, forgive me if I'm not remembering the story right, mm-hmm. but I believe it was somebody who knew he was going to die but got the shot. Like, he saw that explosion and was like, this, I am going to die, but I'm going to get this shot. Mm-hmm. And then after he got the shot, I want to say he like covered with his body or some shit. I don't know.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
Could be also totally fictitious.
Okay.
Knowing me, I almost want to look it up, but I'm not inclined.
On the lava and hope. So we've mentioned a couple of American ones, like in Hawaii and Mount St. Helens. Yellowstone is kind of a volcanic.
Super volcano getting ready to destroy planet Earth.
That's right.
Okay, real quick. Can we do a quick side journey? Okay. A little rest stop on our trip to Volcano Town?
No, hey. Yeah, listen, there's nobody. I feel like there's like a certain restrictor plate that's been taken off of this episode. We can go wherever you want now.
I would imagine I feel much like C-3PO when he had the restraining bolt removed. A big relief. You could just go anywhere.
Yeah.
No, please.
So, the Yellowstone supervolcano, and I'm sure most people have heard of it, but if you haven't, basically all of Yellowstone has, you know, there's a reason that it's got Old Faithful and the boiling acid pits and all this stuff.
It's basically a dormant volcano waiting to erupt.
Like the size of Wyoming, ready to just explode. And when it does, that certainly lights out for all of North America, probably lights out for most of humanity, if not all.
Yeah.
Do you think there's going to be any precursors, any warnings? Are we going to get some earthquakes there? And then, as if it's a Michael Bay movie, out of the woodwork will come a bunch of scientists from community colleges like, I've been studying this for years. Don't you understand? We got to. And I don't know what – maybe the answer is – maybe this is our new Deep Impact Hollywood movie.
Okay.
It's called Lance the Boil. And –
Sure.
It's about the Yellowstone supervolcano, and it's full to bursting, like a zit. And then
Captain Lance Big Arms has to go.
Okay, you know what?
And pilot.
There is a guy who happens to be named Lance.
Yeah.
And in fact, like, there's a scientist who says, this is about to pop. It's going to destroy humanity. And they're like, well, what can we do about it?
He's running into some government agency, and he's got like a mustard stain on his shirt, and he's got like a lot of loose paper. Like I don't know why he would have like one of those big – like dry old driving maps, like
yes,
that,
and he circles it,
flailing it around. Yeah,
he circles it with his red highlighter, and he's like, "This is ground zero."
He has some kind of metaphor, right? It's just like imagine you're in a bathtub, and if you put two bowling balls in the bathtub, all of a sudden it's like he's got one of the, because you got to explain it to the audience.
Sure.
Right.
Okay, so here's what they figure out. He knows that the super volcano is about to pop, right? And so he's like, and the military advisors are like, well, what do you suggest we do? We can't exactly fix this. And he's like, okay, here's what you do. And then much like that scene from Armageddon, you know, with the firecracker in your hand versus the firecracker around a closed fist.
Yeah.
He explains it in simple terms about being a kid and hitting puberty and having a massive supervolcano of a zit. And what do? And he's like, and he goes, that's right, you lance it. And he's like, well, what's that going to do? Whether it explodes all at once or you lance it, it's still going to destroy humanity. He's like, no. Mm-hmm. He's like, you have a military surplus from the bunker buster that was meant for Saddam Hussein penetrates 6,000 meters deep,
because
that's how deep we thought it was.
Sure.
If you fire one of those, it will into create a tunnel that will lance, and all the lava will shoot out so much lava that it won't cover the Earth, so much lava with so much force that it will launch all the way into space. Okay? Like it
a
will...
A directed line.
Yes.
Line. Okay.
Like you ever have a squirter of a zit?
Yes.
And, okay, so he's like, it'll blast on the mirror of space, right? And then, the atmosphere stays clean, and
Earth
everything
has a new
will be
beauty spot.
And then they're like, wait, that much mass ejecting from the Earth, won't that affect our orbit?
Our orbit around
and
the
sun. He says, yes, if we do it during the middle of the day, it will push planet Earth to a farther orbit
away from the sun,
solving global warming at the same time.
Oh my God!
Okay,
wow,
okay. And also all that you're like, oh, what about all that ejecta? And it's like, oh, Earth will now have a ring like Saturn, and it's like, oh this is brilliant,
wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And then and so the final scene. Is and by the way, we were like, well, who's gonna deliver this payload?
Big Arms.
the door opens, and he goes, my name is Lance Boyle. And then there's a hush, and he goes, B-O-Y-L-E. And then they're like, are you a descendant of James Boyle? He's like, yes, of course I am. And then
now I need to know what happened
somebody says of Boyle's Law of Fame. He's like, yes, we all get it. I have a scientific lineage. Yeah. And he's like,
I'm a pilot. I'm the best gosh darn pilot you ever seen. I've dropped bombs from here to another place.
But I've never brought water up to 100 degrees Celsius.
Exactly. Yes. And then they're like, what's your personal situation? Mm-hmm. And he says, well, I'm an alcoholic. And everyone leans in. And he goes, and I've done some reprehensible things in my past. And they lean in farther. And he's like, but most of all, I want to make things right between me and my estranged wife and kids. And everybody just bursts into applause, clapping. And then they give him... Yeah. They give them the SR-71 Blackbird, and then they set up the bomb
bunker buster.
And they do the bunker buster, and yeah. and he goes and he has one Skype call with his wife and kid, and then he launches it, blasts it out, mm-hmm. and then the last scene is all the debris that doesn't form Earth's new rings rains down in the most beautiful star show ever.
Yeah.
And
snowing in July.
Yeah, snowing in July. They call it the July
there's
miracle.
There's an Amy Mann song playing.
Yeah. So anyway, listen, we could start production early March.
If I could provide a note.
Yes.
You know, expensive to shoot in Yellowstone National Park. Turns out there's a volcano underneath there.
Oh, good point.
But what if we could keep that story scientifically accurate?
Okay.
But set it somewhere else in the United States. Where else could we set that movie other than Yellowstone National Park?
I mean, I would say San Andreas, Justin, but that's just we're just stealing from Superman at that point, right? Or the movie San Andreas.
Or the movie San Andreas.
or the movie 2012 or any of them.
Literally any super earthquake movie. Well, I don't know, but is there any on the East Coast? Isn't there like some like fault line in like the New York area or DC area?
Isn't like under the Appalachians super? Did you know that the Appalachians used to be the tallest mountains on the planet?
And then what happened?
Time. And the reason you could tell.
Mostly self-esteem.
the reason you could tell. So India has smashed into Asia mm-hmm. fairly recently, which is why Everest and all those mountains are super, super jagged because they've recently been pushed up. Right. Mm-hmm. The Appalachians were the result of the same kind of continental collision,
which is why they're.
They're rounded, and they've just had time. Because think about it. Every time it rains, let's say, a fistful of dirt comes off the mountain.
Sure. For over a million years.
Yeah, you give it a million years, that's a lot of fistfuls of dirt, and you get these rounded, sloping hills.
Wow. Well, what if Appalachia is a good choice, right? Maybe a little older, though. What if I told you we could set it somewhere in Vermont?
Well, that's
Vermont.
Weird.
I mean, not exactly the setting for roiling conflict. You know, the Vermont folk are kind of a peaceful people.
Hang on. No. Think this through. Opening shot at a Bernie Sanders rally. And it says 2015 or 2016. And then, in fact, it says exactly that, 2015 or 2016. And everybody's losing their mind, going nuts and getting angry. So it's a roiling cesspot of populist energy in that spot.
And that's what triggers the volcano, the rise of populist energy? Well,
I don't know. I got to hear more about this volcano.
Wait a minute. All right, here. How about this one? All right. Establishing shot. Graveyard, right? There is a funeral service attended by one person. He drops a rose down under the falling casket. It's Jerry burying Ben.
Oh,
oh God!
Oh, my heart!
And next thing you know, he gets a page. He still has a beeper for some reason. And it's a 911. And he's like, now to do my second favorite thing. Solve volcano problem.
Hey, by the way, another picnic right here.
Okay.
Bryce and I went to the Ben and Jerry's tour, their factory, one of their factories. They act like it's the factory, it's a factory.
Oh, is it only the?
Well, okay. Hey, we watched this whole Jurassic Park orientation movie. And the whole like first 8 minutes about like down home, good values, hate Vietnam, screw you, Nixon, Ben and Jerry's, we're the best.
And in the last
last 3 minutes, it's just like the one thing they swore they'd never do was sell out to a major corporation. 3 years later, they sold to Unilever, and now it's a Unilever brand. Anyway, go to the gift shop.
Have some Americone dream.
The
Americone dream is good. That got me eating Americone dream.
Really?
There's a volcano in Vermont. Is that what you're telling me?
So scientists using a network of thousands of seismic measurement devices in the largest geographical study of its kind found that an enormous blob of lava was ascending under Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, just in general, the New England area. There's potentially in the geological time frame, right? We're talking a long amount of time. A new volcano could appear in the American New England.
Wait, hold on. Wait, how does a volcano start?
I mean,
like, does somebody like kill a warlock or something? Like,
well, no. I mean, it's like
it's pressure. It's pressure,
I mean,
underneath.
The... I made the joke of the zit comparison, but it's like a zit is you get infected and you have white blood cells fighting bacteria, and you get pus, right? And then it builds pressure, and then at some point,
and then it releases.
It's got to break, right. And then that's what happens with the rock.
And my understanding is that it creates a geological form that there is now an access point for that pressure to be relieved from underground.
So basically, you know, water goes downhill and lava, the pressure goes up. So wherever it's weakest, it keeps pressing, and the hot lava weakens it more and more and more to where finally there's a crack, everything bursts right on out, right. Sometimes to space, according to my movie.
Sure.
Is there such a thing as like volcano management? Like, is there a way that like the way that we have subjugated the rest of Mother Nature to our will that we can do something to alleviate a gigantic super volcano killing us all?
So I believe the answer to that is no. The Science Alert.
Not yet.
The ScienceAlert.com article mentions multiple times that it's going to take a very long time for anything to happen because of this. One quote here is, come back in 50 million years and we'll see what happens. I don't know that there's anything we can do about a volcano appearing, because I don't think that we as human, like, I don't know that we have the long-term scope to.
So let's say they figured out that this is underneath a major city, right? Okay. Like Montpelier or whatever.
Sure.
So I would imagine, like, we've done mining projects before, and we have, as the United States, the phone number to Elon Musk. Like, it would not be the craziest thing to just say, boring company, get your
Instead
drill
of going
machine.
Laterally, go down.
That's well, it's like come in from the side. You know, we want you to dig a 5-mile tunnel that begins at this relatively safe area and just drives right underneath at you know, increasingly going down until finally it pierces there. So basically, just make a more attractive vehicle. I mean, we've never done that, but it we built a tunnel. How long is the tunnel?
Let's see, tunnel length.
Meanwhile, all that lava is floating out. We make a nice little public park on the other side of it. Give out free sticks.
See, look at that.
You know, Bonnie will have the time of her life. Yeah.
Channel's 31 miles. It seems like
the longest mile is the Delaware Aqueduct at 85.1 miles.
Wait, the longest mile? Oh, tunnel.
The longest tunnel is 85 miles. Even.
See, I mean, that seems like once that pierces, I mean, the question is, would that be a more attractive outflow?
Right.
You probably have to. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, that's tough because it's not necessarily gas. This is being specifically described a blob of hot rocks.
Oh, also in the movie, it's the result of fracking.
Okay,
Mother Nature got angry at the fracking.
That's how we get this thing green lit.
That's all right.
the final shot of the movie is the president. Signing a bill, and it's a super ultra close up on his face, and he says, "Frack off,
frack off, nature."
Yeah.
I just got
fracked.
I don't know that a solid or a semi solid.
No,
like, lava
he says.
Would,
he turns
would
to the camera like and gas. Says, "That's a frack attack, America,
America."
Say, I'll tell you what, if you want to frack attack your wallet in our benefit, then go ahead and head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings.
Hey, I'm so glad to hear this. I've been hating my wallet for the longest time, and I was like, oh, I wish I could stick it to that man. Oh, always in charge of me.
Frack it out, baby. That's what we do on the Weird Things podcast. Hey, also, by the way, this is probably something that we're going to do on literally every show throughout the week, but we were making jokes last week about there was some stuff with Patreon. They had new fee stuff, a new way of looking at things. Guess what? Santa Conti showed up and said, ho, 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 we're not doing that. That was a major mistake, and we apologize. So don't worry. Nothing has changed to your pledge. If you are already pledged, please go ahead and do it. If you're thinking about pledging, this is obviously a time of year when you like to, pull out your wallet and buy things for yourself and those that you love, then consider becoming a patron with no worry that it will be any different than the way that we've always done it. Give whatever you want per episode, and it will always go to a good home. So thank you guys so much.
Man, do we want to save it for after things, or do we want to deconstruct a little bit of the calculus on the Patreon thing? Or is that too inside baseball?
We can do it, yeah. I think it affected a lot of people who rely, like us, on Patreon. I mean, listen, Patreon doing that, and this will maybe be a little bit tease for it after things, like that's on the right side of maybe I need to freshen up my resume. Like that was a scary moment in time, and I think it was also for a lot of different people. So we can talk about it.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll talk about it in after things.
After things, check it out. Now this is the part of the show where we get a little raunchy.
Oh.
Oh, geez. Normally we're doing our customary weird things, super long improv movie scene, which is something that is certainly a weird things bit and classic. Not in any way like the other show that Brian Bryce and I do called Night Attack. But now we'll get it into the raunchy bit. Another thing that we always do on Weird Things.
We always do it. Gentlemen, you know, you both saw Wonder Woman, right?
I did. Wonder Woman.
Wow, it's Wonder Woman. Wow.
So then it may not surprise you, maybe. I don't know. Would you recognize the main star of Wonder Woman, Gal Gadot, if you saw her as not Wonder Woman?
I mean, I've seen her as Gal Gadot standing with her husband, who was wearing a T-shirt that says, "Your girlfriend be like," and it showed woman icon, "My girlfriend be like," and it shows Wonder Woman, Wonder and he was standing next to the character.
Okay.
I saw her in another movie. Like, she was just like a big statuesque sexy lady playing a statuesque sexy lady character. So I don't know.
So a video that was posted on Reddit, this past week, it shows Gal Gadot, and it's maybe a little bit of
oh my goodness, that's not a flashlight.
No, that's a kind of light that lights the way to a certain thing.
Yeah, so this is a fake.
This
video,
yes,
is a fake. This is not Gal Gadot on step siblings caught.
Hold on. Did they Photoshop her face onto it, or
this is not?
This
Photoshop.
Is new motion tracking.
This is not motion tracking. This is machine learning.
No.
So a Reddit user who goes by the name Deepfake. Let me make sure I got that right. Deepfakes. Used open source libraries like Keras and TensorFlow, which are machine learning libraries, and it fed it YouTube images, stock photos, Google image searches of Gal Gadot, and trained it with pornography videos.
Yeah,
and taught the node to complete this task, which was to convincingly manipulate video on the fly, and so. He posted a video on one of these websites and then to Reddit of a porno, but Gal Gadot's face has been imposed mostly convincingly on the actress's face.
Wow.
Wow.
And so
it's Gal Gadot. Wow.
It's a pretty quick step from we talked about Adobe's Voco when it premiered, I think it was late last year.
Yeah.
Which was where you fed it a lot of audio of somebody talking and it could synthesize new words based off of like a 15-minute voice sample.
As a matter of fact, did you happen to listen to the Radiolab episode they did about Voco?
No, I didn't.
They you know, covered the demo and all that stuff, but they talked about the political implications of that, and they were pointing that in a culture that is fast to react, fast to condemn, and fast to blow stuff up, what happens when it's so easy to create convincing fakes of everything? And specifically, they called out that the was it Access Hollywood footage or the audio from President Trump?
The famous Trump grab him
right
tape.
Correct. And they were talking about like that happened before the announcement of Voco. Mm-hmm. Post announcement of Voco, what happens when somebody now has the ripcord to always pull of that didn't happen, that's fake, mm-hmm. and we are pre authentication on all this, right? Everything is not like. The answer, of course, is in 5 years, things will be digitally signed in a way that verifies, that preserves the chain, and you can you believe. In fact, I want to say that the iPhone already tags stuff in a certain way. I may be making that up, or maybe announced feature or a future feature.
But I mean, if there's enough metadata, you could say, oh, yeah, this was saved on an iOS.
Correct. And it's definitely been untampered with between here and there, right? But since that reporting... Now, not to get too political, but all of a sudden, President Trump testing out the phrase, oh, no, it's fake. That didn't happen. Even though he copped to it, even though, you know, but the climate has changed and there's an increasing belief that anything could be faked. And then but we're in that mushy middle where it's like we're in a phase where anything could be faked, but not anything could be verified. And it makes things all of a sudden we're back to the 1800s and we need to trust we go by trust by a person's name and reputation.
Well, and I think that's partly why Voco is not in the creative suite yet. Why it's still just a thing that they showed off last year.
It is being used for movies. They are selling it and they are
interesting.
Yeah, for example, because the problem is like let's say you're doing the Avengers stuff and there's one line, you know, principal photography is all done. There's one line that has a politically charged meaning now, mm-hmm. and you're like, well, we can alter the lips or whatever, but we need Captain America to come in and do some ADR. That's a automatic dialogue replacement. Is that what it is?
Additional dialogue.
And then but he's got a flu this week. He doesn't sound anything like the guy on screen. Mm-hmm. So instead, they take the rest of the movie, they cobble together that voice, and they just type in, because this is America, sweetheart. And then they match the lips to do it, and then they get it.
Yeah. Oh, weird. I didn't know it was being used in the entertainment industry.
Yeah, I think they're keeping that a little bit quiet. It's highly restricted, but definitely being used.
Well, this is related to something that NVIDIA did. This was a paper that was released. I reported on a couple of weeks ago. NVIDIA has apparently machine learning AI that can make this image on the left. I believe it's the image on the left, which is a winter image of a car, of cars on the road and trees, and alter it, not even alter it, synthesize a photo of the exact same scene during the summer or during in non-wintery conditions. The leaves are, the trees are full of leaves.
I mean,
the snow is
it transforms a bad winter photograph into a passable spring photograph.
Yeah.
My thought with this has always been, as we see what it can do, we will know more about it and we will know like the markings of this kind of work, right? Mm-hmm. I guess I've always been more on the side of as shocking as it will be, we will always become more familiar with the tools and there will always be some seam that people who work with this kind of technology will be able to ID. But that might just be blind faith on my part as things get more and more and more complex, unless we rely on machine learning to find out whether or not machine learning has been applied on these you know, images and videos. But that Gal Gadot one, there's a reason why that got the kind of attention that it did, because that is kind of a more visceral idea of, oh, okay, now all of a sudden the idea of a celebrity sex tape or a nude leak or something like that. We've always had forgeries on that for as long as there's been Photoshop. But, you know, what if it's very, very hard to tell? And at that point, like, do you own copyright on a machine-learned amalgamation of your face? And if you do, how do you prove it? You know, do you prove it by people posting it with your name? But what if somebody says Wonder Woman bangs stepbrother and doesn't say the actress's name? Is that copyrightable, or is that just something that is, you know, out there?
Yeah, it's a serious ethical concern, because at that point, the original person is no longer involved in the consent process. You can't, like,
certainly.
Well, and it brings up, do you own your likeness? And we have examples of people signing away their likenesses. I mean, in fact, sure. we just watched The Last Jedi, where, you know, Carrie Fisher signed away her likeness, and the question was, do they continue to have her as a character in the series? And they could legally just keep on going, and right. You know, they might have to smooth things over behind the scenes, but legally, I don't know how much recourse there is, especially if somebody turns around and says, I am using my artistic license for a non-commercial product that is a tribute to how I feel about Wonder Woman or Gal Gadot or whatever. And I don't know that legally there would be much recourse unless they could show that, number one, it was damaging, and that it was done with intent to damage. Because
I think if it's this, like in the specific case of putting a celebrity on a porno video, I think that would be pretty... I wonder if that would be similar to, like, libel or, like...
I think it would be defamation of character, which the... I know that libel and slander once...
Libel is written. Libel is written and published, and slander and defamation are spoken or shown.
And I know that the standards for both of those are much, much tighter for public figures.
But if we're talking about something that's being posted online, which in terms of copyright you would consider a publishing, right, then you would have it right there in pen and paper.
What if it's not, you know, it's not referred to as her? Mm-hmm. It's referred to as, you know, Lasso Girl. You know, or the writer of the invisible plane or something like that. There are ways.
Or a possessor of classical symmetry and Greek nose profile, 34-year-old female brunette has sex with stepbrother.
That's AliExpress listing.
It's one of those things that now it's an increasing thing, because there's, as like revenge porn and stuff like that, like the so-called fappening a few years ago. What that ushered in was an age of, if somebody has that leaked, the way that they could immediately get it taken down is by claiming copyright over it, saying that this is my video, I own it, and so it is not that you need to take it down because it is bad for me, because that is a harder a line to walk as a public figure. It is that I own it, you are using my footage without authorization, that is covered under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, pull it down now. And that has been the way that people have argued against this and gotten things pulled down, both big and small. This is a different story, because technically, why is it different than somebody who just looks like you? You know, if you have, there's plenty of lookalikes that look like porn.
Think about any of the actors that made a living impersonating Barack Obama, and some of whom were hired on major American network television shows for magicians, where they tread the line of looking but not looking, saying but not saying, mm-hmm. implying but not overtly doing. Man, this is going to be a legal wrangling mess. But I'm almost more interested in culturally what happens. Do you think we become totally jaded, where none of us believe anything? Do you think that we lead to the existence of like a circle with a T in it, and like it's truth stamped, and that can't be duplicated. It's lineage by whatever authority has been verified from in principal photography and on.
Maybe, but we've always found ways to edit metadata like that.
I think that I do think that there will always be some scene There will always be something that somebody can, who knows what to look for, will be able to look for it in the same way that people who are professionals at Photoshop can look at expert Photoshops and be like, yeah, this is good, but you can tell if you see the bing bong and the and everything else, right?
Right.
What's interesting here is, you know, will you look at on the other side? Will there be such a prevalence of this and such a dispute on this is real, this isn't real, this isn't real, that if something actually real comes out, you can hide behind the specter of, nah, this is machine learned. Like, this is obviously. Well,
and keep in mind, we're actually seeing, I think, a version of that emerging in American politics, to go to your wheelhouse, Justin. Nowadays, it's fairly automatic. Just as 20 years ago, receiving a forwarded email was immediately followed by going to Snopes.com. And to point out the lineage of the obvious fakes and the trending stuff and so on. Nowadays, whenever a politician says certain things, it's very quick for me to go to PolitiFact that has their truth-o-meter. And whether or not you agree with that institution, the point is some institution will fill the space and basically say, like Snopes, like PolitiFact, we're going to do the hard work to the best of our ability. We're going to tell you with a simple graph the amount of truth. And likewise, because keep in mind, we live in a world where everyone with an iPhone 10 is walking around with a studio that you know removes imperfections, that makes you look good with proper lighting and all that stuff. So even posting a Instagram photo of yourself, like there would be a place for that little, you know, 22nd century PolitiFact thing to say 10% enhanced, 30% enhanced. To the best of our ability, this is 70% fictitious based on an actual situation that happened, but you know, with multiple shots composited to create this type of
vignette. So you're describing like a ubiquitous truthy meter, right?
Yeah, or a watchdog.
Yeah. There will be a expert class that will emerge to stamp these kinds of things, and we will sort them out far faster than we might think now.
And that's also like, that's a plugin and a subscription that I might subscribe to today. If it could analyze text and then just real quick say, like imagine a plugin, and this is a different format, but it speaks to the thing. Like, let's say there was an app for $4.99 a month and it had a plugin in Chrome, and everything you read at all times, let's say you're in journalism, so you're concerned with the facts, it did stuff like analyze every block of text and say where it likely came from. So if you open up the Dallas Morning News, right, and then you go through, and all of a sudden there's a block in orange, and just very faintly next to it, it says, you know, word for word from AP release. This the original quote was this, but it appears they've tightened it up for formatting, yeah, and so on. I mean, I think we're already in a world where there's this need, but I don't know how it's going to be filled as things get more and more murky.
Well, we certainly see that now with academics, right? Like there's whole programs that are dedicated to preventing forgeries in a post Wikipedia era, when it was not just like you're not just typing it out of a book encyclopedia, which back in the day used to be the way to do it. You could just copy and paste it right from,
specifically exactly how back in the day would that be done, hypothetically?
Well, hypothetically, I once got 3 credits from Syracuse University because I was there at the beginning of Wikipedia on a pre-antiquities Roman religion mystery religions paper. It was one of those like you get 3 credits for one paper. Mm-hmm. Although I didn't copy and paste. I just looked at first. I was doing research and I was just Googling these things. And I'm like, what the hell is this site that just has all these answers and exactly everything that I'm looking for? Wiki what? And so yeah.
No, so,
but yeah, no, that was. I mean, now there are whole programs where you just professors can enter that stuff right in there, and it searches all available databases for either pre-written papers or Wikipedia, and it'll just like show you gigantic blocks of text that are copied word for word. So certainly that tech is out there. It would just be a matter of adapting it to make it more appealing for an average consumer.
I will say it's an interesting idea. It reminds me in the dystopian element of it, of the recent re-reporting of the Chinese social credit score.
Oh, you know, how much of that is super fake?
I don't know.
Because it's definitely that story. I haven't read the story yet, but the cover of Wired magazine this month is a front of a shirt wearing a lapel that says, "Hello, my score is blank." And it talks, you know, certainly about that subject.
I mean, I think it's still real. I know it was a thing like a year ago when it was announced. Maybe that was 2 years ago, but it's back up again because I think it's being moved.
Because now it's true. that's what you do is you let it be fake news for a good 5 years, and once it's simmered long enough that everyone thinks it's fake news, you just pop out and do it.
From this USAtoday.com reporting that it will be mandatory for citizens by 2020. And this if you've missed it, it's the idea that they can create a social credit score based on the things that you buy and the things that you post online, and use that credit score to keep an eye out for shady individuals. And
I'll tell you what, I know, and I don't want to turn this into a political thing, so let's just kind of skate by it. But there was a lot of a Sturm und Drang about I think it was the EPA getting a list of words that they.
It was the CDC. They weren't allowed to use the word fetus or whatever.
And there was a lot of Orwellian. I don't know what inner office spat is happening at the CDC or between the White House and the CDC. That's Orwellian to me. Like the idea that Big Brother is literally tracking your every purchase and post online and will compile for you a reputational score is that's scary. I think the idea that it was a voluntary thing that was pitched a few years ago, remember, and people reacted to the way that they did, tells you everything that you need to know about how much we want a full quantification of our online movements.
Well, and
whether
and
or not it's inevitable.
I think there is a biological, and I want to speak about this totally. I don't want to speak about the ethics of whether or not this is a good or bad thing or whatever. And there are certainly a million situations I can imagine where you would end up with an unfairly low score that would have damaging effects on your life and stuff. But biologically speaking, we've talked on this podcast before about Dunbar's number, about the fact that our brains are built to handle the concept of a tribe about 150 people large. And the problem is, we live in a world where we encounter thousands of people every single day. And so as a result, our brain uses these heuristics where when I say Iran, you don't think of an entire country of people. You think of one meta-Iranian that you're thinking of, right? Or if I say Brazil, you think of one Brazilian. And so that's how you spread your perceptions of people across the world. That's obviously not great. And I do think there's a place for technology to step in for little things like reputation. When you live in a village of 150 people, you know who the town drunk is because he woke up, pooped his pants on your front lawn one time ago. But in a world where all those characters are constantly recycling and you don't know who's who, they're constantly shifting, I don't know that some kind of, I mean, we already do that with credit reports, right? If you are renting to someone, it's not unheard of to get a credit history or a background or to call references or any of that stuff. Those are all proxies to do what we're built to do back when we were just, a tribe of monkeys.
But those are like financial solvency, right? That's like if you're late on your bills or something, where this, this Chinese system is like, hey, if this guy buys a lot of video games, that impacts him negatively because it's against whatever.
Sure. It's
itemized on a cultural or social level and not like a financial solvency element, which
there's a set of financial norms that anybody renting or extending credit to someone is cares about. What's your history for paying back? What's your history for how much you do? What's your
how
history for falsifying or declaring back bankruptcy or all that?
Sure.
Like really, all that does is expand it to everything. And so the question is less about what is the scope of it. But to me, the question is more like, what are norms? Like, You know, if you're an older generation, you may think, I don't want somebody who buys a whole bunch of video games handling my stuff. Because in my mind, somebody who buys a bunch of video games doesn't take reality very seriously. It might steal from me or whatever. And you know, if you're the government of China, then, you know, it's like, what do you mean they're constantly visiting Reddit.com? That's not normal the way I want normal to be, because that's a highly volatile place of political discourse. So, I don't have an answer.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. You guys have time for one last topic before we do picks?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah, let's absolutely.
Let's get in.
So let's talk on a neurological level, in basic terms, what happens when you're driving your car and you come up to an intersection and the light turns red.
Wait, sorry. What happens when the light turns red?
Yeah.
I stop.
Yeah, yeah. You stop. You stop you know, maybe if you're feeling a little wacky with your friends, you can pull one of those fire drills where you run around the car.
But that's a more complicated process than just I see red, my foot goes on the brake, right? Because you're receiving visual information. That information is being processed in your brain.
Oh, got it. We're describing the effect, not the process.
Right.
The process is that electricity is sent to a light. And a light-emitting diode.
Uh-huh. Well, it's in the brain. Let's talk about the brain.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
So you would process that information. Different parts of your brain say, okay, so I'm seeing that's a red light. Red lights mean I need to stop my car. I'm in my car. So I'm going to hit the brake. So I'm going to take my foot, and I'm going to push my foot down on the brake and stop. Scientists in this reporting from the New York Times have found that they are able to inject information into monkeys' brains to bypass some of those internal processes.
Wait a minute. So instead of actually taking a red wavelength of light, interpreting it through the optic nerve, and then having your brain do its operating system thing of perceiving it as red,
and processing it,
instead it just jumps to the conclusion where it's just like, don't bother to show the light, just tell them they're seeing red.
I mean, basically, so the basic idea of this experiment that these scientists did is they set up monkeys to play a game when they had a button, a knob, and a lever in front of them. And when the button glowed, they pushed the button. When the knob glowed, you turn the knob. And when the lever glowed, you pull the lever. And so they conditioned them to play that game. And over time, they turned the brightness of the glowing down. And for a while, that affected their accuracy, but eventually they were able to perceive lesser and lesser amounts of light. By using a very light electrical stimulus on the monkeys' brains, they were able to have the monkeys play this game without any actual physical glowing of the buttons happening. They were able to either create, like, we don't exactly know because they're monkeys.
We can't get their descriptions of the subjective experience,
right, of it. But they accurately and with the same speed as playing the game legitimately were able to do the correct inputs based on these electrical stimuli.
Well, I think this is one of the most insane things that I get a little head spinning when I think too hard on it, but mm-hmm. As I understand it from the stuff I've read, what we perceive as free will and what's actually happening around us is essentially we're manufacturing a consistent narrative that sometimes may involve children making noises, but that actually, I don't know, like our brains appear to be like an arguing bunch of diplomats, and then an action is taken, and then after the fact, the narrative is smoothed over by what we perceive as our conscious brain as having been a rational decision, when in fact, so often, I mean, think about if you've ever bit the head off of someone who didn't deserve it because you were hungry. Didn't think I'm hungry. Yes. You didn't think I'm hungry. Until like days later when you look back on it. In the moment, you're like, no, this guy's a jerk and he's got what's coming. Mm-hmm. And
you're the sum of your context at any given moment.
Correct. Yeah, sure. Right? And yet we're also built to believe that we're responsible for everything. That's the weird part, even though there's no we. There's only this weird soup of a feedback loop.
Yeah. And so the initial idea behind this technology is that it could help people who have had strokes and have parts of their brain damaged and you know are not able to make all those neuralinks between the different parts of their brain. But it also creates some long-term questions of, like, if we have a sophisticated enough system to light various parts of your brain, could you give people fake visual information, fake audible information, such that they truly did believe that they heard that raw data?
Yeah.
And act accordingly.
I mean, I think that's a fascinating idea. If even you were able to change one small detail in a story or fabricate one memory, like, there's already ways. I guess the question would be, is there any way to do it that would be more effective than the ways that we can already do it? We can already stage something, right? We can already make somebody believe that they saw something that they probably didn't see by kind of gaslighting in a more traditional sense.
Or performing a magic trick, right? I mean, like illusionists do that all the time.
Or is this performance enhancing? Is this giving you, hot wiring your brain to understand, you know, cues faster or more instinctually? Like, is this something that people would want if it gave, you know, athletes a more focus on the ball or something, right? That you are able to marshal your reflexes just that much faster because you are disregarding signal to noise.
Well, and that's interesting because the broad strokes of the way that this experiment are being carried out is that it's not faking raw data. It is injecting information into that neurological path.
Well, let's.
So if you say had a system that could see a red light and know this means that the person needs to go, and if you're talking about an athlete where time is a super important factor, you could skip if you had a
you're saying like don't bother to put any lights on stoplights. Instead, put up what we'll call it a green screen, like a gray block, and just let everybody perceive the appropriate color for where they are and the velocity they're going and so on. So, like, if you're if you're in the intersection, perceive it as green. If you are within, you know, 500 yards of the exit, perceive it as yellow. But if you're past the cutoff where it would be inappropriate for you to get there, have them, before they get there, perceive it as red. So everybody's perceiving a different color at a different time.
Huh.
And so... That would eliminate, and this is a very, very small example, but that would eliminate the brief cognitive dilemma that we have when you're going 60 miles an hour and then the light goes from green to yellow. You have to do the math of how fast am I going, how far off am I out, how long do I estimate yellow, it's going to be yellow, and so on.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, you know, the computers handle that. And to go a step farther, think about what we were just talking about with reputational scores. Like, if you can inject... What if you subscribe to a service that would inject you with vague feelings about people? So in other words, it would enhance your intuition, because right now your brain is constantly scanning your environment around you, looking for predators and so on. Yeah. But what if instead you subscribe to a service that basically fed you instincts based on, we'll say, credit score for right now? So as you walk around, you're like, I don't trust that guy. And you don't know why, you just don't. But the reason why is because the service that you subscribe to has injected you with those neural pathways, because this guy's had 4 bankruptcies and 3 divorces. Oof. And so you essentially get like a plasmid upgrade to your brain wherever you go.
And now we have used technology to reinforce caste systems, which we never see.
Wow. Yeah. Jeez. This is a very specific.
It's a big heady episode. Heady episode.
Heady episode. Man, I'll tell you what. And to think we just started off with Lance Boyle.
Well, I think there are a lot of implications of society that we posed here today. You guys want to do picks real quick? Justin, you got a pick for us?
Yeah, I'm gonna pick the newest Star Wars. I'm sure that there will be much discussion on many platforms, including, I'm sure, a far longer review when Andrew is again on the show. Mm-hmm. But man, was I blown away by that movie! I went to the movie and I kind of expected one thing, and what I got was, you know, nothing short of remarkable. I think it's an achievement, and it made me like love Star Wars on a level that I kind of thought was sort of gone forever. I kind of think that they had sort of codified what it meant to be a Star Wars movie in a way that kind of felt more like a superhero kind of trope, and this totally shattered that for me. I'm sure there'll be many, many, many words spoken about it, but man, I was over the moon for it.
Yeah. Did you like Last Jedi, Bri?
Loved it. Congratulations, the rest of the world. You've now experienced what I experienced 20 years ago reading the Star Wars novels. It turns out it's a bigger universe than you thought. And the only way to go into that universe is if you stop obsessing about the same family of 12 characters constantly. And both overtly and sneakily, they made it very, very clear that this movie was an indication that it's time to stop obsessing about those movies that came out 30 years ago. And I couldn't be happier. I loved the set pieces. I loved going to the casino. I love the wacky cast of characters. I love the opening vignette, which, by the way, I full on cried at, even though, yes, I knew it was just telling a well familiar story about the noble person who sacrifices themselves for the greater good in World War II, you know, all the way to the point of having an exact duplication of the bomber capsule, gunner capsule or whatever. Didn't care. Loved all of it. This whole movie was about subverting expectations, and there was a lot to be broken apart. If you hate this movie because it feels like a rejection of the earlier movies, then congratulations. You felt the feeling I felt when Disney announced that all the books don't count. All the books don't count. That's all legends. The only thing that counts are the prequels and the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. That was a deeply painful thing because I really loved all that stuff. But eventually I came to understand that along with that comes the ability for them to tell new stories that there's no way for me to know what's coming next. No amount of having read the books on the side would give you an unfair advantage of knowing what comes next. And that is a real gift that they gave to us. And now they are giving that gift to everyone else by announcing in this movie, it's no longer going to be about that Skywalker family, even though it's called the Skywalker Saga. It's going to be about the rest of the universe. They didn't buy the Skywalker family. They bought the Star Wars universe.
Cool. Yeah. Bryce, did you see? I know you're not a big Star Wars man.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I feel like there's a chance I might go see it over the holidays with the family, but I just never jumped in, and I think the last one didn't hook me. So I think there are other movies I'd rather see before.
You know what? Actually, your opinion on this one might be the one that I would value the most. And I know I said that there's a Force Awakens, and that's did enjoy it for that. But you're the only one who has only experienced the Force Awakens, and now can tell me objectively, without, you know, and dispassionately, how this one differs and which one is definitely the better movie. And I will say this much, from your reaction of Force Awakens, I think you'll enjoy this one much more.
Yeah, if I do go see it, I'd probably go rewatch Force Awakens because it was just a while ago, and I mean, it was 2 years ago.
Sure.
I would say really Last Jedi, and part of what I love the most about it, I think, is part of the divisive nature. I mean, we should state that this is a divisive movie for some element of the fandom, is that really all the Last Jedi takes from Force Awakens are these characters. Like, I think they are true to the characters. But beyond that, you know, everything that you might have thought, like, all right, next movie, we're going to get this and this and this, and we're going to find out this, and that's going to happen. And I really hope that when this person gets that thing, that this reaction, put that out of your mind.
I just realized, I think you'll be very surprised. I think you specifically will be very surprised at some of the twists they take on this one.
Well, given that I will be producing tonight's extra long episode of Spoiler Time,
you'll get to hear all about them.
Jedi, I'll hear all about
them. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and if you want more of that talk, I'll be on the Spoiler in Time, and I'll be on Unfriend Me tomorrow. We are doing, if you didn't think The Last Jedi was awesome, then unfriend me. So we are taking live calls. We are opening up this internet bar fight and letting it spill out into the streets.
Yeah. Cordkillers.com and frogpants.com to find both of those shows, right?
Yep.
Brian, you have a pick?
Yeah. My pick is a book that my daughter's reading right now.
Okay.
It's the first book of the Timothy Zahn Heir to the Empire series.
Oh!
Penny loved The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. And when I said, I was like, oh, it's a lot like the books. And she's like, there are books? I was like, oh, yeah. And in fact, the audiobook for the Timothy Zahn trilogy is really great. They got the characters. The voices sound great. They have the John Williams score and everything. Mm-hmm. It's great. And she's like, oh, okay. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I guess it's in my Audible library if you ever want to listen. Next day, walk in, and I'm listening to Grand Admiral Thrawn talk to Admiral Pelion about the Ysila Mari in the ship, and I'm like, oh, I got her. So Penny's falling into that rabbit hole, and I'm enjoying listening along with her. Those are great books, and they're only apocryphal. They don't line up with the movies. If you're a perfectionist, you know,
yeah,
keep that in mind.
Very cool. I have a pick of something I've been playing recently. And it's a game that came out, gosh, 2011. 2011 was when this PC version came out. And I think when it came out, it was pretty well received for a lot of the technology and the graphics fidelity that it had. I am talking about L.A. Noire. Do you guys?
Are you playing the game or the VR version or on the Switch?
So I'm replaying. So they did release a new remastered version for the PS4 and the Switch and the Xbox. But I've had it on the PC for a year or two now, and that's got all of the case DLC stuff like the new versions had. So I was like, I've got it on PC, so I'll just play it here. And that game is really good. It has got some issues. Basically, you play Cole Phelps, who is a policeman in 1947 in Los Angeles, and you are working your way up, and you're using your expert deduction skills and crime solving powers to try to make the streets of LA safe for people. And along the way, you discover not just all of the various cases, but also these larger plans that are in action and the different forces that are working against you. And it really, it's one of those things where it's kind of a convenient storyline of like, oh, this person's involved. Ah, and they're this person to you. Okay. But I do think that it offers a compelling look at a character who is very justice oriented. The fact that it's built on, for the time, the Rage Engine, which is what GTA was based off of, but you have a game that is almost tonally the exact opposite of GTA.
Yeah, right? it's about truth and justice and sticking by the rules and doing the right thing.
Yeah,
well, which is weird when you're driving, because all I want to do is just break all the rules and run over people. And it's like, no,
you always
knock it off.
You get a little warning. Hey, you are an LAPD officer, and your duty is to uphold the safety of the citizens. Like, to the point where even if you are driving erratically, but maybe not hitting anybody, your partner will say, "Hey, I don't hear the siren." Because you shouldn't have the siren on if you're going to be driving like a maniac. I think it definitely has flaws in the way the original versions came out, right? Like, the basic premise of the game is that you do a lot of investigating and interrogating people, and you have the truth. You have options: truth, doubt, and lie. And when you say someone is lying, you have to give evidence to sort of point out their contradiction. But that system doesn't work great.
It doesn't make
a lot of sense.
From what little I've played, and I did a couple hours of playing on the Rage Select podcast, it really felt like just rolling a dice. Like you're blindfolded and you got a dart, you're like, you're lying. Yeah. And then, you know.
Well, part of that goes with the facial recognition. You're supposed to read cues off of people and, oh, they're kind of looking away, maybe. But the problem with that system is that it doesn't make a lot of logical sense. Doubt and lie, the difference between those two is not the same as truth, and it's weird. So apparently in the new version, and this is the way the script was originally written, those options are good cop, bad cop, and accusation.
Ah.
Which in a lot of cases makes a lot of stuff make a lot more sense.
So accusation would imply that you know you have something in your pocket that can back up your claim, whereas bad cop is bluff, like, and then good cop is bluff in another direction.
Yeah, and so you're able to, like, you don't need a patch to do that if you're playing the old version of the game. You could just think, oh, okay, maybe I just need to be the bad cop here.
Right.
And it really generally works out. It's cool because you can kind of think of it as a very elaborate adventure game where you can miss clues, and that can affect your score, and it can affect your ability to finish these cases. But I think it's not bulletproof in getting you from point A to point B logically. But I think it's pretty cool, and now that it's been re-released, there are a lot more options to play it. So that's L.A. Noire from Rockstar and Team Bondi.
Awesome.
Awesome. Yeah.
Well, guys, you know, it's just a very typical episode of Weird Things, you know?
You know?
Just me, you, and the listeners. But until next time, it's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.